So the question was asked, can a woman be a rabbi? And as usual, we're going to have to begin with a bunch of introductions and get a little bit confused before we try to get clarity. So let's begin with a little bit of Jewish history. When the Jews left Mitzrayim, they had three leaders. They had the main leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, but he had two partners. One was called Moshe, another was called Miriam. And Miriam led the women, Aaron and Miriam. Right? So we have Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. And Miriam led the women. When Avram and Sarah did Kiruv, so Avram would guide the men, and Sarah would guide the women. So she was some Rebbetzin. She's teaching all these women about Judaism. Let's fast forward for a second, and then we'll rewind again. To this day, many rabbis' wives answer many questions. Now, a rabbi is a rabbi, and a Rebbetzin is a Rebbetzin by virtue of the fact she married him. That doesn't mean she learned anything. Rabbi Akiva Eger's wife couldn't read Hebrew, so she's going to answer the questions in halacha, but she might be able to answer, well, in our house, this is what my husband taught me, this is how we behave. When people call me up and ask me questions on how to check fruits and vegetables, I say, let me ask my wife. I always ask her. When people call me up and ask me what hechsher I would recommend, so I say, I don't know. And if they push me to the wall and they keep saying, okay, but what do you eat? So I say, well, why should you eat what I eat? You eat whatever your rabbi tells you. But if they push me to the wall where I can't get out of it, so I tell them the truth. I don't know what I eat. I once called Rav Halberstam Zatzal, and I verified with him Hashem, and I called Rav Neventzal, and I don't have a clue. When I go to the store, I call my wife, and she tells me. I go to the store, and I say, okay, what do we eat? And my wife tells me. So there are things that practically a wife can know much better than her husband. And she does the shopping most of the time. So when I got the list of which Hashem we eat, I gave it to my wife, and she memorized it, and I didn't. So nowadays, she knows much better than me what we eat and what we don't eat. But not only that. And here we'll rewind a little bit. Let's go back in Jewish history to the period of the Shoftim, the judges. Shofet was someone who led the Jewish people. He was a pretty big rabbi. He was like the chief rabbi when it comes to running the show. And we know in our history that there was Devorah, who was a Shofetet. That means that the Jews came to her and she judged them. She taught them. She gave over the Torah to the Jewish people at that time. Let's fast forward a little bit in Jewish history to the period of kings and the end of the first temple. And we have Huldah, the prophetess, a relative of Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu, the Navi. And she was a prophetess. Now, you don't become a prophetess by just sitting and twiddling your thumbs. That means they were exceptional people. The Mishnah tells us, "Kolam lamed bito Torah ki ilum lamda tiflut." If a person takes the time to teach his daughter Torah, so there are different opinions in the Mishnah, but we conclude, bottom line, that the way her mind works, it's as though you're teaching her foolishness. She's not gonna, her mind doesn't go with learning Gemara. You ever try learning Gemara with a girl, you'll see their minds are very practical. They're very good at many things, but when it comes to this, that's not their forte.
So kind of sits there.
Now, I didn't say what you're saying.
Oh, okay.
Each of us have our strengths, and women have bina yetira. They have understanding that men don't have, and by the same token, women datan kala. When it comes to de'a as opposed to bina, we say their de'a is light by comparison to a man's. Their bina, their understanding is greater than a man's. Their de'a is lighter than a man's.
Mazadah.
That's a good question. That's a different question. Maybe we'll get to that. But without defining it exactly, we see that we have different strengths. And that means that in their avodat Hashem, their advancements can be made in fronts where ours cannot. Like the Gemara tells us that there was a Tana that he and his wife used to give charity. He'd give money to the poor, and his wife would give food to the poor. And one time, there was a family that they'd bring food to, and the family wanted to see who it was that was bringing them the food, so they tried to open the door as they were there, they ran away. So the man says, oh, I want to see who it is that's bringing me the food all the time, so he starts chasing after them. And they're running and they're running and they don't want the man to see them. They don't want him to be embarrassed. This great rabbi is bringing him food every day. So he's running after them and they're running. So they turn a corner, they enter a yard, and they see an oven there. They jump into the oven, this big oven. and the oven had just been turned on. So they're hopping in that oven. The husband's hopping. He says to his wife, "Wow, my feet are boiling." And she says, "Put your feet on mine. Mine are cool." So the Gemara says, why is it that she can stand in a boiling hot oven and her feet are cool? Because she did a bigger tzedakah than he did. He'd give the poor money and then they'd have to go and purchase food. She gave them food ready-made. So she had greater merits than him. We find with Avram and Sarah also, Chazal tells that Sarah outnumbered Avram in prophecy. She was greater in prophecy than Avram. So a woman, even though she doesn't use the same tools as a man, can attain great spiritual heights. But that does not yet mean she can be a rabbi. Ed echad neman b'isurim. We say that one witness can be believed when it comes to things that are forbidden. For example, you guys come to my house, you eat the food. You think I have any idea what food's being served on the table? We're all trusting my wife. But now, that's all based on the concept, ed echad neman b'isurim. We believe one person when it comes to prohibition. A wife tells her husband the food is kosher, she's believed. She tells her husband, "I'm pure," she's believed. She says otherwise, she's believed. Whatever she says, when it comes to basic things of Isurim, we believe her.
What if she will say, "I'm clean," and then right when you go in the school, she's not clean?
So a person can lose their trustedness. It can happen. The halacha does discuss what happens if a person is caught to be a liar, a man or a woman, both. What happens if the man tells his wife, "This is kosher meat," and then as she's opening the package, she sees in the receipt, it says he bought it at Burger King. He bought it at in the United States, Burger King. So she says, "Hey, buddy, you told me it's kosher." She could have the same issue. Burger King, I don't know what's kosher in this country. I don't know. Never been to Burger King. But let's go back to where we were headed. So we find in our history that there were exceptional women who had positions of leadership. The exception. And we find in halacha that we're not encouraged to teach our daughters a tremendous amount of Talmud. We teach them Tanakh, we teach them the laws they're supposed to know, and we try to ensure that they know what they need to know in order to run a good kosher Jewish home, which encompasses a lot. You could spend your whole life just learning that. There's a tremendous amount of Torah that encompasses.
Bruria is also a woman of exceptional both beauty and smartness.
Okay.
Now
all of this tells us about our obligations. What happens if, like Rav Pesen Zatzal told me, his mother-in-law loved learning Torah. So when her father was teaching her brother the Mishnayos, she'd sit in the other room and listen in. And without her father knowing it, she learned all of Shas Mishnayos. And every month, this woman would chazer Shas Mishnayos. Not bad. Every month, she chazers all Shas. Pretty good. She knew all of Tanakh by heart. You had exceptional women. And these women were the exception. The halacha discusses that a woman can be trusted if a woman comes in and says, "I know this is pure or this is impure when it comes to the laws of family purity." You had women who ruled. In our history, there were women who were experts. You know who Rav Mordechai Eliyahu learned to rule in laws of family purity from? He learned from the Ben Ishchai's daughter, a woman. In our history, there were women who were experts on matters of family purity and other issues. But here we enter a practical realm. We live in a world where the external influences are creeping into Judaism. And people are not interested in the dry halacha and the accurate tradition that we have as to what a woman's role in Judaism is supposed to be. It's true that there were exceptional women, and there can be exceptional women, and if they do learn, then a woman can know halacha, and we find in our history, just like Dvorah, that there were exceptions, but they were the exception. And the halacha would respect that. The halacha discusses that. But the halacha doesn't encourage it. It's not a situation where you'll say, because the exception could be so any woman who wants can be the exception. Just because you want to be exceptional doesn't make you exceptional. And not only that, when I was younger, so I'm still young, but I was once younger. So, so I was learning the halachas of women learning Torah, and it bothered me a lot. So I went to my Rebbe, and I said, tell me, can a woman learn Torah? What if she really wants to? And what if she's really talented and she's got a really good head on her shoulders? So he answered me like I answered you. He said, there were exceptions. For the average woman, it's not good. For the average woman, her head is not built for learning Gemara, and they have their strengths and they should work on their strengths. And this isn't an area where they have a chance at excelling. Quite the contrary. This isn't the area where they're going to grow in. If they want to grow spiritually, there are other areas which are their domain. But there are exceptions. So I heard that and I smiled and I said, well, my daughter better be an exception, because I'm going to have a hard time otherwise. So he looked at me and he smiled and he said, believe me, you don't want your daughter to be an exception. Be happy if you have a normal daughter, and just because you want her to be an exception doesn't mean she'll be an exception. And even if she wants to be an exception, that won't make her an exception. And most people throughout history who were exceptional suffered for their being exceptional. As much as they succeeded, they suffered for it.
Was it a social prejudice?
Socially, it's problematic.
Yeah,
now, you look at Bruria. Look at her.
Because she was found to be...
Let's just conclude. In today's day and age, where there's tremendous influence and pressure to move in a certain direction, and the movement has nothing to do with halacha. The movement is because there's women's lib, and people want to push that there will be equality, and they're looking for all the loopholes in halacha, which do exist, to try and make what they call equality, and we don't view it as equality. We view it that they're putting the women down. A woman has her strengths and her responsibilities, and when you try to equate a man and a woman, you're harming both. Because each one has his strengths, and each one has their potential, and each one should develop their potential. And the fact that we're created differently is a fact. We are different, and we have different tendencies and different strengths. And they have their strengths and their ability to grow in their areas, and we have our strengths and our ability to grow in our areas. And to try and make like everything's the same, that's a mistake. And Judaism doesn't view it as the same. But there were exceptions, and there could still be exceptions. The only problem is that today there are movements, and because there are movements, and these movements are pushing in directions that contradict our tradition, so when there's a thesis, so there's an antithesis. And it's going to take time till we can reach synthesis. Right now we're at a point where there's a movement pushing in one direction, pushing to change our tradition, and as such, being that this has been the case for the last 200-300 years, the reaction is no, everything has to be the same and we're not going to accept any of this. And as such, maybe what I should have answered you is no, a woman could never be a rabbi, that's not her job in life, that's not her position in life. Throughout our tradition there were always male rabbis, and that's the way it was and that's the way it's going to be. As a reaction, and that's really the basic answer that should be given today, that we're faced with these threats from without and from within. But being that we're mature enough and experienced enough, we can recognize that the answer is not so dry. In today's day and age, the answer has to be so dry. But if we look at our history, we see that the answer is not only that. There were exceptions, but they were the exceptions. They were one in a generation or one in 10 generations. They weren't 50. And I want to end with one point. There was a rabbi who wrote an article, and he said, I find many girls calling me up and looking for the halachic loopholes to do things that men are doing. And they're looking to find the permissiveness of... One second, I'll get to you guys. The permissiveness within halacha to do all kinds of things. And what bothers me, says, I don't remember if it was a rabbi or a Rebbetzin wrote this. He says, how come is it if these people are so intent and they want to keep halacha so much, how come I don't find them in covering their hair more than the other women? How come when it comes to laws of modesty, I don't find them going to the greatest degree to fulfill the laws of modesty and all the other laws in the Torah? It's only in the areas where they feel, oh, the men have these mitzvahs and I don't, let me see how I could get in on that. There I suddenly find them, so to speak, being extra pious. If they were really so pious, if that's really what was driving them, then it should be reflected in everything else that they do as well. And that's something to think about. In today's day and age, we're finding people pushing a lot of things, and if it stems from piety, and not from the fact that it bothers them that this is the way Judaism is. But if it really stems from piety, then a person has to grow. There was once a kid who really wanted to learn. He was 9, 10 years old, and he called me up and he said, "I want to learn every few minutes, my parents won't let me." So I told him, before you take the time that you're supposed to have off, before you take your break time, and you want to take that time to learn, first maximize the time that you're supposed to learn. When you could say that all the time you're supposed to be in class learning and doing your homework, you're maximizing your learning time, then think about adding a half hour to your learning schedule. But it's very tempting for a person to feel, I'll add 10 hours to my learning, I won't go out and play, I'll do everything, all day long I'll be a pious person. And a person doesn't realize, wait a second, am I growing incrementally? Am I really growing? Am I really ready for that? And that's a question that every person has to ask themselves. And again, although we did have it in our history, it was one woman in a generation or one woman in 10 generations. It wasn't hundreds of women in each generation. And also, they didn't hold positions in the rabbinate, correct? But again, Dvorah did hold a position of leadership. Is this on this point or something else?
No, it was a follow-up. In Sweden, we had, although the leader of the parasha, the weekly parasha was male, then we had mixed study. Is this something that is okay by